The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to the She Word. Conversations that women rarely have, but really should. She Worders, I'm going to be honest. I have truly agonized over this show, more so than any other topic, because the topic we're looking at in this show is so emotive for so many people. But essentially, the strapline of the She Word is conversations that women rarely have, but really should. And by avoiding this topic, we are not living true to what the She Word represents. The topic of abortion is immediately going to raise eyebrows, stir up reactions, and often makes people sit in one of two polarized camps. But we're approaching this topic from a point of compassion and addressing the situation that women, couples, families find themselves involved in, and who have really, truly no ideal solution, no perfect answer, and having to make a choice that no woman, couple, or family really ever wish or want to have to make. The issue of abortion could touch any one of us, any woman, any family, for a wide variety of reasons. I was recently contacted by a heartbroken woman who was traveling to the UK with her husband. She was 21 weeks pregnant with a dearly longed for pregnancy, and she was told that the baby that she was carrying was no longer responsive, the brain was no longer functioning, and the baby would not survive. The lady was so distraught, as her options were either to take the baby to full term, knowing that she was carrying a baby that was already effectively dead, or to fly to the UK to terminate. She shared the agony of having to explain this to her daughter, that her little sister wasn't ever going to make it. The anguish of having friends and family touching her tummy and passing comments that you'd expect to pass to a pregnant mother. I can honestly tell you that my heart broke and I was filled with compassion for this woman, her husband and her family. And I became aware of the fact that no one wants to have to make this decision for any reason whatsoever. And one thing struck me, that on top of the trauma, this family was also experiencing an element of shame, that this woman and her husband would not be able to openly grieve for the loss of this deeply wanted pregnancy for fear of judgment and recrimination. So we're looking at this topic with two ladies who have really put their necks out to highlight the issues surrounding abortion. And I'm also joined by one amazing woman who has a very unique view. Ladies, thank you so much for being at the table. Thank you for being here and part of this incredibly important show. Davinia Hamilton is an award-winning Maltese creative arts freelancer based in London and co-author of Blanket Ban, which we'll be hearing about in just a second. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
I'm really glad that you're here. Marta Vella is a experienced theatre practitioner for working in the performing arts industry, both in the UK and Malta, and also the other part of performance Blanket Ban. Thank you for being here as well. Professor Maria Pisani.
Hi, Trudy.
Hello. You are an associate professor at the University of Malta at the Faculty of Social Wellbeing. You've been on the show twice already, and I'm going to stay with you right now. So glad to have you back here. We started this conversation a year ago, but for the sake of this show, can you fill in any of the details that I've missed out about you? Who are you?
You did this to me last time.
I know.
Who am I? I'm an academic and I've been working on social justice issues in Malta for a number of years now. I'm a mum of four adult kids and I have three cats
And you have three cats. I like the detail. I think there's a common theme at the table. Marta, thank you for being here. What did I miss out about you?
Well, I have a dog, so I'm the only one who's not a cat lady on the table. I'm Marta. Just like you said, I live between London and Malta, and I'm a creative, and Blanket Ban is one of the most important pieces of work I think I've ever done. So I'm really, really happy to be here and sharing this with you all.
Brilliant. Well, thank you. I'm really glad that this has brought us together, because you are an amazing duo. And the other part of the duo, of course, is Davinia. Hello, what did I miss out about you?
Hello. So I also have a cat.
Okay.
So, you know, the set is complete.
That's it.
I am a writer, a performer, and a reproductive rights activist. And for that reason, Blanket Ban sort of marries all of my loves together. So it's a very important show for me. And I'm also very happy to be doing it with a very good friend of mine.
Yes.
Fantastic. You met in London?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's absolutely wild.
I didn't know
so
that.
So we've never met in Malta. And then we just met when we...
Is that even possible?
And, yeah. And our families know each other. We've obviously been to the same
We've been to the same
university.
Event. I know that we went to watch night together.
Definitely. So we were literally in the same place. We know the same people and, you know, attend the same circles. Never met in Malta. So we only met in London. Wild.
Oh, my word.
I know.
Well, welcome the pair of you to the table. Look, I want to start off by just pointing out, and for anybody that's watching, we're going to be very mindful of this, that you guys have received an astonishing amount of hate relating to this play Blanket Ban. And we're going to just touch on that for a second. But every time the issue of abortion is mentioned, people jump to opinions immediately without necessarily understanding or bringing compassion to the topic that affects women, couples, and families. So I want to start off by asking why. Why is this topic so incredibly emotive? And why do people jump so readily into one of two camps? Because they really do, don't they?
I think that when we talk about abortion, we're not always only necessarily talking about abortion. I think when we talk about abortion, what people are talking about is also gender roles, family roles, what they expect of women, what they expect of life, faith, all sorts of things. And somehow all of this gets distilled into this one topic. That's one of my theories. And it's one of the reasons that I have for why people get so animated about this. And all you have to do is just say the word. It's like a magic word. People lose all sense of like rationality. It just becomes an emotions-based issue, which then is really difficult to speak to.
Yes.
You know, it's hard to have a discussion when somebody is at that level of emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because you mentioned that there's so many other things that are tied into it. Gender roles, as you mentioned, religion, obviously politics. And we're seeing this globally now that it's also, I would say, weaponized for political gain and so on and so forth, which we are not going to go anywhere near today, because we want to stay with the side of compassion. But is there any other reason why this is just so emotive, so, so emotive for so many people?
My two cents on this is that there's always a difference between who people are and who people think they are. And, you know, I think people always think they're doing the right thing, always think they're saying the right thing, always think that they are sitting in the right camp. So I think that sometimes, you know, people steer clear from difficult conversations, steer clear from hard conversations, and you know, the truth is ugly. This is a really messy, difficult, hard, highly emotive topic, as you said. And I think that even from a point of self-preservation, one would reason that, you know, the right thing to do is to believe this because everything else is wrong. And then that puts, you know, the said individual in a very hard position, very impenetrable. And what we're trying to do, both today and through our show, is to really soften everyone, to let the light in, actually, because it's so important to talk. It's so important to share. It's so important to just understand each other and give people an opportunity and to even, you know, show some kindness and receive some kindness. Mm. And I think that we were raised in a certain way to really believe, you know, what is right and what is wrong. And even that was completely polarized, as, you know, you're raised by your parents, this is right, this is wrong. That when it comes to this issue, there's just an immediate wall. And
it's interesting. I want to jump in there because else I forget what you just said there that I really wanted to draw out. But there's a respect, isn't there? You were talking about two opinions. There's a respect. We can respect each other's opinion without having to agree sure. with each other's opinion. We don't need to say, oh, I agree with yeah. you, but I will show you respect. And I liked what you said just a second ago, is that the goal is to open the conversation. Well, you can't understand somebody else's viewpoint unless you take the time to work out what they're saying and what they're where they're coming from, and whether that's a personal point of view and a personal experience, or whether it's a lived experience, or whether it's something that is a, I don't know, come together through reading or watching or understanding.
I would agree that we need some historical contextualization. The podcast today is happening in the Maltese context. And whilst abortion or the topic of abortion has now been sort of, let's say, in the public sphere for a few years, not many, less than a decade, we haven't started having conversations about abortion. And I would disagree with you a little bit, Trudy. I don't think there are two options or two choices. I think it is so complex. There are so many different perspectives to this, and we just haven't begun to start talking about it.
No. I couldn't agree more. I wasn't saying that there are two camps.
But this is what we've been told.
This is an area that sits way outside
it's
of
so
two camps.
Bizarre.
But the easy option, just as you yeah. were saying, Marta, is just to go straight to an opinion mm-hmm. and be hardline about that. And this is my opinion, without even registering that these are individual cases, that these are people's lives at stake here.
And I think that it's really important, you know, it's only the first couple of minutes of this podcast, I think it's really important for us to state that anyone can have their opinion. And we aren't here to change people's opinions. Mm-hmm. But just as you said, respecting someone else's opinion, and this is where then it links to the barrage of hateful comments that we got, but respecting someone else's opinion and understanding that it's, you know, we differ on this topic, and this is a choice that you might want to make if you're in that circumstance, and it's something which I will never do. And that's absolutely fine, and that's where we should be. What is then, it just very quickly spirals into just, honestly, just hatred. Mm-hmm. It just turns really, really ugly very quickly, just because I have decided that what I believe is unequivocally right, okay? So this is the one thing that is true and is okay when it comes in, when it comes to an opinion about this topic. So you have a different opinion, then you're most definitely wrong. You're most definitely going to hell. You're most definitely, you know, an awful human being. And the list goes on and on and on and on. And I think that actually, if that were to be the starting point of how we can make things better, because as individuals, we can talk, we can raise awareness, then it's up to the legislators, then it's up to the, you know, but if as human beings, one-on-one, we can actually start by giving each other some respect and some space to listen with an open heart and actually take in some very real stories and some very real narratives that can happen to you, to your sister, to your partner, to your aunt, to your neighbor, to your colleague, to your best friend. Mm. And they have happened yeah. to all these people, but you probably don't know. because they haven't felt safe to tell you.
Yeah.
So I think that's where we should start.
Yeah. And I think what I wanted to add to that is that from what I've observed, a lot of the time when I see this conversation happening in Malta, when the abortion conversation happens in Malta, people are talking at the level of ideology or of morality and not of reality, right? We're talking about hypothetical situations. And so if you were in this situation, would you keep the baby? And if you were in this situation, would you... Life doesn't work in that way.
Mm.
That life is not clean like that. Life is really messy and complicated. And often, especially in this situation, you get a couple of weeks to make a decision. But more than that, as Marta's saying, these are real people.
Yeah.
Who are having to make these decisions.
Yeah.
And we learned this really well through the work that we did for Blanket Ban when we were interviewing people, Maltese people who've had abortions. And it really hits home how real these people are.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, their own dreams for their life and the things that they've wanted since they were kids and the things that they love and the things that they hate and the people who love them. And, you know, all sorts of factors that when we're having the conversation about abortion on the internet, safe behind our screens, we are not considering these people people.
But aren't there a lot of issues? And we spoke about this before we sat down at this table. There's a lot of issues that you can intellectualize and you can talk about when it's removed from you in a third person context and say, well, I'd never do that and I'd never do this. And, you know, I'm a divorcee. I'm remarried. I never intended to be a divorcee, but it came to my door and it was a situation that I could never have stayed in.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of opinion about it until it happened to me.
Yeah.
And when it happens to you or to someone close to you, yeah, then you have to look at these things differently. And we're going to come to that in the context of this conversation, which I'm really excited about. But I want to just set the scene before we go any further. What are, for anybody who doesn't know, what are the laws pertaining to abortion here in Malta? Let's put it down black and white. What's the law?
So the law states that if you have an abortion on the Maltese Islands, you can face up to 3 years in prison. And this is not just for the woman having an abortion, but it could be for a friend that helps them procure the pills or is involved in it, and also any medical professional that, intervenes. Now, why is it so complex? Because as far as we know, no one has ever gone to prison for having an abortion, even though people have been tried. There are two cases that we know of currently happening in the Maltese courts. One was reported by an ex-partner, and one was reported by a medical professional. And that's also something that's very interesting. The party in question believed that it was their obligation to report the abortion. And it isn't, right? So it's against the law to assist someone to get an abortion, but it's definitely not against the law to guide someone to give someone, you know,
advice.
Advice and an idea of your
options.
Information.
Yeah,
including having an abortion.
But also, it's not against the law to treat somebody who's had an abortion. As far as I know, like...
It's a grey area. Mm. It's a grey area, which is also hugely problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is a caveat to the law that came in recently, is there not?
Yes. Last year, there was a change to the law in terms of abortion for those cases where a woman's life is at risk. And in those cases... it is a medical decision that is taken. So it's taken, the decision is taken by the doctors, and three doctors need to agree in order for the abortion to take place.
So the question here...
Can you name any other urgent medical intervention, like a life-saving medical intervention, any, just name one, that requires a panel of three doctors to approve of it? Any? CPR.
You're asking me? No, I can't think of anything.
I'm asking anybody who's watching. Imagine CPR needed a panel of three doctors. Imagine like DFIB needed a panel of three doctors.
And it's also really vague, as Maria said, because it's unclear if three doctors have to agree unanimously. Mm. What happens if, you know, to want to make one decision, but the other one not. So it's really grey. It's really grey. And in fact, Doctors for Choice in Malta didn't support this bill because they contested the fact that it could actually create more bureaucracy in the process, because it take before you had one specialist or one physician that makes that call. And this bill was actually introduced to protect the any medic that needs to make that decision. So there's also that question mark where this improvement, this advancement, is it there to protect the woman who's at risk?
Because effectively the woman who's going through what amounts to like a horrific trauma of you're being told that your life is at risk, you may die. That hasn't changed at all. Like, that hasn't changed anything for you.
She has no agency to decide what happens to her. So it's still down to the medical professional, but now it's down to three.
Okay. So with the exception of the life at risk caveat, abortion is absolutely 100% illegal in Malta, cannot happen in Malta. What if somebody travels abroad? Can they be prosecuted if they have an abortion abroad?
No.
So it's what everything that happens in Malta. And I think it's important to just be mindful of that. How does this compare to other countries? How does this compare to our neighbours, for instance?
So I would say Malta still has some of the strictest laws on abortion. Technically, it's not a blanket ban anymore, because now officially there are cases in which, like we said, this panel of three can say, okay, this pregnancy needs to be terminated. But for example, Poland has a blanket ban on abortion apart from cases of rape and incest. So again, it becomes very messy, because when you're sitting there and you are making the rules as to what is allowed and what isn't and how or what, then I think that's sometimes an even stickier situation.
Okay. But we still have essentially one of the strictest rules in Europe.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the world.
In the world.
In the world, yeah. In the world.
I want to keep the conversation about women. We started off with this conversation talking about women. You guys touched on women, and I know, Maria, you have stories as well, but talking about the women and or couples or families involved. And I want to keep this discussion, as I mentioned before, away from polarized viewpoints, because this is very much, from having read the script, of what blanket ban is all about. Essentially, we've mentioned it before, any one of us could be personally affected, or through someone we love, we could be affected by this topic. So give me an idea that you guys have of the circumstances in which a family or a couple or a woman essentially might find herself in a position where she's making this decision. What are the situations that a woman might sit in that would lead to having to make this choice that nobody really wants to have to make?
I'll preface this by saying that the statistics that we have show that the majority of women who get abortions are already mothers, right? So it's not their first pregnancy.
In Malta. Just to be...
Not only, though.
No, but I'm saying, but even in Malta.
Even in Malta. So, like, Malta is not some special case. Exactly. Like, the statistics we have internationally apply here, because we are all people.
A bit of myth-busting.
Absolutely. So, yeah, the majority of women who get abortions are already mothers. So already, like, let's do away with the idea that women who have abortions are somehow, you know, some sinful, capricious, like... That's not the case. No. It's like women having to make real choices with the you know, grit of their lives. But situations that might lead somebody to need to have an abortion. Well, there are situations where there is a medical emergency, such as you mentioned before. There are situations where, you know, a woman has been tricked into having sex or stealthed by a partner.
Stealthed means what?
So stealthed is a form of non-consensual sex where you've consented to sex, but not without contraception.
Okay.
And then your male partner removes the condom during the sex act without your consent.
How would someone do that?
Yeah.
It's really
but it happens.
Creepy.
It's really creepy.
And it's bad and it's a crime.
It is a crime.
Okay.
But you know, you haven't consented to that part of the sexual act. It's happened anyway. It has led to a pregnancy. Now what? So that's one situation. So one of the stories that we have in Blanket Ban, right? One of the women who has shared their stories.
And these are based on real stories?
They are based on real stories. And okay. A lot of the time, what you will see in the show is verbatim, which means that it's word for word what the women said to us. And if we use any names during the recording of this podcast, they will be pseudonyms. All of these women are anonymous. And we have a real duty of care towards these women. They have trusted us with their
absolutely.
Stories. So be assured that any name that we used is a pseudonym. There is a woman in the play who in the play is called May. She is a woman who was kind of done dirty by the system in as much as she was not given a proper sex education. Her family was very conservative and wouldn't let her even say the word sex, to refer to like the sex of a child in a form. They would like freak out if that word was mentioned. She was not educated about contraception. She didn't know where babies come from, essentially. And she was kept this way by her family, who believed that, you know, virtuous womanhood meant that you had to be as pure and innocent and whatever as possible. This woman grows up, is in her early 20s, is just starting to put her feelers out into the world, right? And she's making friends at work, and she's like flirting with a few guys, but she's really shy, and she's like definitely not ready to have sex because she's probably waiting till marriage to do that. But she gets invited to Gozo for a friend's birthday, and she's having a wonderful night. The next thing she knows, she's awake and her clothes are not there. Like, her clothes are off. And she's, I don't know what's happened to me. You know, she puts her clothes back on and gets on with her life. And then a few weeks later, she misses a period. And then she goes to a doctor. And
she only goes to a doctor because she's talking to a friend. So there's someone in their early 20s who's never been to a gynecologist before, just because it's just, you know.
I mean, only sinful women go to gynecologists. And so she goes to a doctor who's like, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. Because she goes because she's feeling a bit unwell, right? And the doctor's like, oh, there's nothing at all wrong with you. He goes, but you're pregnant, right? You know you're pregnant. And she goes, what do you mean? Like, I'm a virgin. I don't know what you're talking about. Her friend knows somebody who went to London and got it done. And maybe there's a doctor who kind of gave her the information. She manages to find a way to get to the UK and has the procedure done in the UK. But she has no memory of the conception of this pregnancy. Doesn't know that it happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is one case that you discuss in the play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another story.
Yeah.
Is a woman called Leanne. She already had a son, so she became a mother age 23, 24. A single mom, loves this kid, and still lives at home with her parents in her childhood bedroom. And her son has a little bed in the bedroom. And she's now the son is 5, 6 years old. She's dating some guy first few months, 2, 3 months. And this man really loves her son and was always asking to see photos of her when she was pregnant, which she thought was really sweet at the time, you know, very, very sweet. And
but she made it very clear to him, like, look, I have this one child. I don't want any more children. I'm like, this is it for me. I'm happy with this one child. I do not want any more children.
Yeah, so she spent obviously her 20s being a great mom to this kid. This kid is her whole world. But she was excited to sort of not get her life back, but, you know, her career is now flourishing. The kid is becoming more independent. And so she's dating this guy. They're sleeping together. And one day, and he ghosts for a couple of days, right? He ghosts for like a week or two. And one day she gets a call from the correctional facility. So, you know, the call says, you have a call from inmate, blah, blah, blah. And she finds out that this guy is in jail. And again, anyone who may hear the story and go, because, you know, it's crazy, but completely plausible to meet someone. You only know them for a few months. You obviously see sort of their best side, you know, nothing about their history. You know, laws, courts, the justice system, delayed justice, this, this, and that. We actually have no idea what his background was and why he was in jail. So she receives this call from jail and he says that basically he had this court case that had been going on for ages and he is in jail now. And he asks her, "Are you pregnant?" And she thinks, "What a crazy question!" Yeah. It's like, "No, of course not." You know, like, "What are you saying?" Anyway, she hangs up and she starts feeling really paranoid about all this. She goes, gets a pregnancy test, and lo and behold, she is pregnant. And this guy keeps calling every day for like a week, always asking if she's pregnant. She lies and she says, no, she isn't. She obviously wants nothing to do with this guy anymore who completely not only sort of lied and betrayed her based on who he is, where he came from, what his life would have possibly looked like. Because obviously, if you're being charged for something, you know that there's a possibility mm-hmm. that you're going to go to jail. But she also very much never wanted to have some sort of kid that would link her to this person forever. So this is yet another case.
But what was his motivation?
When I heard the story, it seemed like something that he wanted for his own personal, like for his own gratification. He seemed to be into the idea of pregnancy.
Okay.
Yes. Something about it felt very seedy.
Yeah.
Because then she said basically that it was either a case of stealthing or she also had suspicions that he was actually pricking the condoms. So all of this was wild. Anyway, and she ended up, she spoke to her family who were completely against it. And she said, "Listen, I can't go through this again. I already have one kid. I'm not with the father anymore. And ultimately, this is my life. I am raising this kid and not you." Something that usually, you know, happens. Another woman intervenes, a very supportive woman, a very supportive mm-hmm. best friend, helped her pay for it.
And this is a recurring theme that we found.
Yes, accompanied, you know, and this is, again, something I think that really needs to be... really needs to be stated here that whilst getting an abortion in Malta for obvious reasons it's a very lonely decision to make and women feel very isolated. Mm-hmm. But if there's a hero in the story, it's always another woman. And yeah. Many times it's the best friend. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's also something that we feel really, you know, happy about and really like warm about, because women really come together in moments of great difficulty.
There's a great solidarity among,
that's true.
Among women. So
this was another story and something that meant a lot to Leanne. Months after this had happened, she told us that she was actually, you know, making some tea late at night. Her mom came in and said, "You know, Leanne, for what it's worth, I think you made a great decision." So this sort of latent validation from her own mom mm-hmm. actually meant a lot to her. So that's another story.
I remember what really struck me about Leanne's story was that she told us that when she decided to go and have the abortion, she was afraid because the image that she had in her mind of the abortion, because based on what people had told her, was that she was going to be taken into a dungeon, they were going to strap her down, and they were going to rip something out of her, and there would be blood everywhere, and it would be this gory, horrible, horrible thing. And then she goes, "But it was nothing like that. It was nice people. It was clean. You know, they treated me kindly. They showed me kindness. which is not something that she got here.
Another story that comes to mind was Doreen. So she was living abroad at the time, and she was in a bad relationship, and she left this bad relationship and moved out of the apartment she was sharing with her ex, got herself an apartment, her life was looking up, she was making new friends, everything was, you know, going really, really well for her. Valentine's Day came round, and this guy turned up at her door with roses and with a box of chocolate, saying all the nice things, saying sorry, saying how he misses her and how he just wants to talk things through. And she says, and I quote, she made the biggest mistake of her life, which was let him in. So she let him in through the door. And she just remembers being punched and blacking out. She woke up the next morning, and she had bruises all over her body, and she had her panties around her ankles. And whilst I won't go into, obviously, who the person is, but this is someone who whose work is in the medical world. And I think this is an important thing for the story. And she went to hospital the next day because her wrist was really hurting. A doctor, a nurse, noticed something was off, offered a rape kit. She completely denied, you know, anything. And she's like, no, I'm just here for my wrist. And she left. She only told one friend about what happened to her and tried to get on with her life. Sure enough, a few weeks later, she missed the period. And only then did it dawn on her that she could be pregnant. So again, really important to realize that someone who's a medical professional was so traumatized by this rape and by this experience that not only denied it, not only refused the rape kit, that it didn't even cross her mind that, you know, she could be at risk of a pregnancy. She found out she was pregnant, and she was... She then decided to have an abortion, and she was accompanied by this one friend. And for many years, this was the only friend who knew about what happened to her. This friend tragically passed away from breast cancer in her late 20s. And only after this person realized that the one person who knew, you know, isn't with us anymore, did she feel like she needed to speak to someone else about it. What was also interesting is how when she shared this story, I feel like she was a lot more focused on the journey of the abortion, being accompanied by this friend, losing this friend, not having someone to carry this with, rather than the horrific story of a very horrific rape that, you know, literally left her with broken bones. I think that something that really hit us was how sometimes it's not the event itself that stays with that individual. There's so much more nuance around everything else that someone carries.
But these are four accounts that we've thrown into the middle of the table that I really would struggle if somebody blamed that woman. And unfortunately, in all of these cases, in three of these cases, I should say, that the perpetrator that put the woman in that position was a man. obviously. Mm-hmm. We're against their consent, against their choice, against their will, with the first case, the second case, and the third case. You'd really struggle for someone to turn around and say, that evil woman, that woman is mm-hmm. The epitome of everything that is wrong, because that woman had no choice. Mm-hmm. That woman was not put in a position where she could consent. But from what I understand, there are other situations that are not necessarily lack of consent. I mean, the stories that you've shared are absolutely abhorrent.
Yeah.
You would not wish them on any single other woman. And even the story that I shared right at the very beginning, I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Yeah.
But these are situations, I can't imagine anyone holding these women accountable and blaming these women. But this is not the only situation that you mentioned right from the beginning, that statistics show that quite often it is people who have families.
Yeah. And I think this is a really important point to make. And I will say this, I was actually surprised when we were doing our research and doing our interviews. I thought that the majority of women were going to tell us something more mundane. So I was surprised by the amount of like trauma stories that we got. Maybe it's because people who have been through that situation are more likely to speak up, because just as you said, they feel like they are the victim in this circumstance. They were not given the choice. They didn't consent. And so it's easy to say, no, it's not your fault. Obviously you're allowed, right? But I'm gonna be quite frank here, okay? Because the argument that I see so often online is like, if you don't want to get pregnant, don't have sex. Cool, great. Tell me the last time that you had a sexual encounter that was scheduled, you know, with like the time. It's only the person that I'm going to be married to. It's only on a very convenient. That's not how life works. It's not for anyone. We can pontificate as much as we want. In many situations, a woman has had sex with her husband, or has had sex with her boyfriend, or has has had the best intentions, has used contraception and the contraception failed, or you know, shouldn't really have said yes to this sexual encounter, but was like, oh, okay, we'll do it, and then got pregnant. And, you know, maybe she's a mother already, and maybe they're really struggling financially, and she knows she can deal with these two kids that she has, but a third one would throw them over the edge. Maybe it's a woman who's, my God, she's just cracked that part of her career that she's been dreaming about for 20 years. Maybe it's a woman who's on a medication that is not compatible with pregnancy, and would therefore have to choose between her own health and the health of a person that doesn't really exist yet. Mm-hmm. These situations are no less legitimate than the other situations that we mentioned. If we really want to treat people like people, if we really want to treat people like human beings with dignity, then we have to give them that dignity. We have to allow them that, what we call that political freedom, right? The freedom to author their own lives.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. Throughout those accounts, those scenarios you mentioned about the woman, and I feel like it's worth mentioning right here that in the case of the trauma cases, obviously the woman has no choice. It's against her consent. She didn't choose to be in that scenario.
Yeah.
But even when you mentioned the scenarios of, you know, medication has failed or contraception has failed, and you mentioned the woman is having to face this. And I think this is one thing that we really have to address, is it's not just about the woman. There are two people involved in this situation. And again, I want to just humanize this by saying nobody wants to be in that situation where they have to make that choice.
No.
Nobody wants to be there having to make that decision. It's not some way where you say, okay, I'm going to be careless, so I'm just going to say, okay, let's just run with it. Let's really shoot everything to the wind and just hope for the best.
But also, as far as I know, like, human cases of parthenogenesis are not documented yet, by which I mean women can't get themselves pregnant. There are two partners in situation. Yeah. So women don't just magic up a pregnancy.
Exactly.
I found it really interesting, and I can only imagine how it must have been to start receiving those stories. And again, I we need to remind ourselves how very recent it is in Malta to be having, to be talking about, because like I said earlier, I don't think we're having that conversation yet, but that we're actually saying the word abortion out loud. And I recall when I first started talking about abortion, and this isn't just, it wasn't just my experience, it was the experience of many of my friends and colleagues who had also started speaking about it publicly. We started to receive messages on social media from friends and sometimes from acquaintances from women who I found it fascinating, because in some cases they'd had their abortion many years ago. And for others, it was more recent. But they felt the need to tell me. Mm. And for me, it really demonstrated the importance of a safe space and being able to say, this happened to me. And in most cases, it was a decision taken. It was a family planning decision, a decision taken with their husband, that I have two kids and I wasn't ready for a third, or I had one child and I...
Hang on a second. It was a decision taken with a partner or a husband.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. In many situations, it was a family planning decision, and they didn't need to tell me, and they gained nothing mm-hmm. by telling me. I just felt it was an opportunity for them just to be able to. It was almost a relief to just be able to say, I had an abortion, and that was it.
But doesn't
and that was it. They, we didn't continue. There was no conversation to be had, in truth, because like I said, they didn't need anything from me. We never met up for a coffee to talk about it because there was no need. It was simply an opportunity to say, I had an abortion and this is why I had an abortion. And that was it. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that happened, and again, it wasn't just with me. I have a sticker on my laptop. The first time I put that sticker there, I did it without thinking. And every time I change my laptop, I now make a point of putting that sticker there. And the sticker is just somebody you know and somebody you love has had an abortion. And that is it. And without intention, I was signaling that this is a safe space. And it was exactly the same thing. And I was being approached by women, in this case, generally younger women, who would come and ask for information, and I would just be able to guide them in the right direction. There's Dear Decision Makers in Malta as well that collects women's testimonies of what they went through and why they took the decision. But I think we underestimate the importance of just being able to talk about it and perhaps talk through a decision or just talk about what happened.
It's witnessing, isn't it?
It's witnessing. It's bearing witness.
Yeah.
It's bearing witness. Right. I've gone all goosebumpy because there, like I said, there was no, to my mind, there was no reason to tell me, aside from perhaps just that acknowledgement, okay, we're going to sit together and just acknowledge that this happened.
And I want to keep reiterating this, and I'm going to say this several times throughout our conversation, that it really doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree mm-hmm. on abortion. Yeah. It doesn't matter what my personal viewpoint is. I should still have respect and compassion for the woman, the family, and the couple that are facing a decision that they never wanted to have to face,
yeah.
to being in a position that they never had wanted to be in. And I just want to keep reiterating that over and over again.
But I loved what you said at the beginning when you said just listen with an open heart.
Absolutely.
And I just think that was such a powerful thing to say. I will repeat that over and over again.
Absolutely.
Because it's...
That's the point, is that...
Yes.
The one thing that I just want to say about men in this conversation is that, just like, you know, women and all parties involved, it's always a spectrum. So we've heard stories where when women told their partners that they were pregnant, The man immediately flaked, didn't want to have anything to do with this. So that was yet another reason as to why this woman felt alone, isolated, and like she couldn't get on with this pregnancy. We've had stories where a partner was incredibly supportive, you know, making tea and filling up the hot water bottle and, you know, stroking their hair as they were going through an abortion on their sofa because it just wasn't the right time to do it. We've also heard stories where it was something the woman really wanted, the partner struggled with, but respected the woman's decision. And we've also heard stories where a couple really wanted a baby and it was incredibly hard for both of them. And even, you know, in any pregnancy situation, even a miscarriage, it's also very hard for a man to, because it is a loss for the couple. A conversation is very much centered around the woman and what she is going through, but there needs also to be space for the men. So whilst we're here talking about women's rights, which is the right thing to do, there's also space to very much acknowledge that, just as you said, you can't have a pregnancy with just a woman being involved.
And we can hold that space.
Yeah.
We can do that.
I think there's also like a social sort of misconception that, you know, children are a woman's domain. Like it's for women to grieve or for women to think about children and babies and pregnancy, but which is really detrimental to everybody, because no, men have a bond with their children as well. Men want or don't want children too. And, you know, of course, a man who wanted to be a father would grieve.
Would grieve. That, and this would be a very, very hard thing to go through.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
We had the same experience. So when we first started trying to find people who had abortions, it was hard. But once women realized that that was what we were doing, once they heard about the work that we were doing, they contacted us. Mm-hmm. They wanted to talk. Mm-hmm. They had been starved of opportunities to talk, which is one of the reasons that we feel so honored to be able to bring this show here. Because that tells us, no matter how many silly comments are left online, there is a very real group of people for whom this is just so important.
Well, you say something in the show that really hit me. And you said this powerful statement that a blanket ban on abortion doesn't stop abortion from happening. It just drives it underground. Mm-hmm. And that really hit me hard. Because if this is true, and we know this to be true, I want to ask you, what are the results? You've had women coming forward. What are the results of the ban in Malta? What are the dangers? What are the consequences if there is a community of women who've gone through this experience, families that have gone through this experience, couples that have gone through this experience, but haven't had the safety that would be provided by a safe medical environment?
So abortion in Malta is happening. It is illegal, but it is happening whether we like it or not. I think that is something that we all have to acknowledge. So last week, Doctors for Choice have released their latest numbers. And basically they said that within the last year, 600 pill packs were registered to have arrived in Malta. We don't know whether they were used. We don't know whether they led to an abortion. But these are also, this is also the official data that we have. So at least 600 pill packs. When we did the show the first time, we had this line where we said, that's more than one abortion a day. We're now at way more than one abortion a day, right? So this is happening whether we like it or not. So the conversation that we need to have is, why? What would we achieve by sending a woman to prison after having had an abortion? What does this achieve? Two, this is happening. People know about it. The authorities know about it. We've had doctors who said that, you know, people at the post office, you know, they know what these boxes look like. They know what it is. So, as usual, once it's something that it's not, you know, actually creating any issue within society, any real hurt, any real disturbance. So we basically know that this is happening. We're just not talking about it.
Of course, and that's why my very first question is why? Mm. Why is it so hard to talk about? Why are people so ready to jump to one position or another without understanding the issue? But what are the other effects if it goes underground? I mean,
So you've asked this question, and for me, it just makes me think of this one specific woman that we spoke to who had an abortion in the 60s, right? Had an abortion back in the 60s. She was very young. Didn't tell anyone about it. Got married like 10, 15 years later. Had been with her husband for like 30, 40 years. The day of our interview, she told us, ah, yes, I had a conversation with my husband last night. I told him about my abortion for the first time. They'd been married for decades.
Had children
together.
She became a mother, yeah.
But this was not something that, this part of her like previous life is not something that she thought that she could share with him, which is heartbreaking. I mean, for the person who's closest to you to not feel like you're able to share that.
And it's not just that, because we're speaking about, it was 570 pills that were recorded last year, but we don't know how many abortions took place abroad as well. So how many of our daughters, our sisters, our best friends, our cousins have had to travel on their own. And I find that heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That they have to take, they have to book, they have to take the journey, they have to be there on their own.
Lie to everyone about
lie
it.
To everyone.
Because
and
it's not like you're telling
and
your
live
friends.
And continue to live that lie.
And I will say this. Medical abortion is safe, as in with pills.
Yes.
It's safe. It's mostly reliable. It's, you know, misoprostol and mifepristone, which are the two abortion pills, are listed in the WHO's list of essential medicines. But having a medical abortion is really painful.
It's not a walk in the park.
It's not fun. Like, it is a very, very painful, gory experience. And so many hundreds of women are having to sit with that alone. Not even somebody to make them a cup of tea, right? Not even somebody to go, you know, I'm here for you if you need me. Just completely alone and in a foreign country in a hotel room.
That actually makes me think of another story. Not in a foreign country in a hotel room, very much in their parents' home. So in lockdown, no one could travel. Mm. So everyone who was facing an unwanted pregnancy, super panicked. Locked at home, praying that these pills that they have ordered online make it in time. And there was this one story where they did make it in time and she had to take them in her room. So she was going through an abortion next door to where her parents were sleeping.
And she was just thinking like, I just want my mom. I want my mom. I want my mom. And her mom's in the next room.
So you just have to go through... I had a friend of mine who told me that she was pregnant and she wanted to have an abortion. She procured the pills. We were in London and she pretty much spent the weekend at my house. It really felt like it was a very bad period, you know, cramping. And sometimes, you know, these cramps are just a bit more intense than others. Like Davinia said, you know, it's not a fun day. And I was just there for her and I was making tea. I was, you know, talking to her, trying to, you know, distract, change the channels. But at least you're just there. You can't do anything to make it easier, but you're just there.
But you said something back there that I really want to come back to. You said that this friend of yours decided to terminate, to have an abortion. And I hear that. And in light of what you just said a second ago, I think we can look at this as if it's just a decision. I just decided. Mm. And I want to keep coming back to, it doesn't matter what your opinion is. It doesn't matter where you sit and where you feel that you want to place yourself on your wisdom and judgment about the topic. When it's someone who has to make that decision and has to make that choice, that is not an easy choice or decision. You don't just make it. I remember a friend of mine, my very best friend, a childhood friend, had an abortion before she was 20. And when she came to have her family, she said she had never, ever forgotten the situation that she'd gone through. Exactly you said, as you said, with the people that were getting in touch with you, with the people that were getting in touch with you guys. I think it's easy to make light of it and think, oh, we just make a decision, we order the pills and there you go. Even the physical is traumatic, but it's, we have to remember also that that's an emotional and mental process as well that nobody wants to go through.
There is, so there is a study from, I think, 2018 or 2019 called the Turnaway Study, which is like one of the most comprehensive long-term studies following women who've had abortions over like a decade or two. The statistic that we have is that 95% of women do not regret their abortions. Mm. Fine.
Yeah.
Great. Good. Those 5% are ours as well. We don't cast them out. And I think when we polarize an issue like abortion, what we're saying to those 5% is, sorry, we can't take you in because you're bad for optics. We can't have people who regret their abortions. No, we can. We can. If you regret your abortions, you are welcome with us as well.
And I think this is an important point as well. I think there are some women who are able to take that decision really easily, mm-hmm. actually. You know, so, you know, there's a massive spectrum, isn't there? What I'm most interested in is providing the absolute support in as many different ways as possible for women to take that decision, to make a choice.
Can I go one step further? Because we're going to come to support in a second and we're really going to touch on that. Before we even get to support, can we talk about prevention? Because as we address this matter, I truly believe that whatever your viewpoint is on abortion, prevention should be in everyone's interest. Mm-hmm. Everyone's interest, wherever possible, if possible. And of course, there's situations we've described at this table where that is not possible. So are there things that could be done better? Are there things that could be improved on alongside these issues? Because we'll come to the support in a second, but surely we want to see...
The short answer is yes.
Yes, of course.
I mean, and absolutely. The sexual health policy is going through the consultation and publication, and it's a massive improvement from what we've had in the past. But I don't think we'll ever be at a point where we're doing enough. And it's pretty clear in Malta that we have a long, long way to go in terms of prevention in Malta.
Well, I think that the latest statistics that I know about is that the majority of Maltese people do not use contraception.
It's
like over half do not use contraception. I'll also say this. I mean, it's been a long while now since I was at school, but so I don't know what it is like now. But the level of sex education that we got at school was shocking. It was shocking. The level was, don't do it before you're married. That was it. That was what we got.
Well, and there's still a lot of shame around it as well, isn't there? I mean, you know, things have moved on a lot from then, but there's still a lot of shame,
I
think.
Oh my gosh, yes, yes. Well, I can tell you from having hosted some really fantastic shows on sex that sex education hasn't changed an awful lot since I was at school, and that was a very long time ago. But it also comes down to as well, not just sex education, but understanding consent. Mm-hmm. It was an absolute horror to me to know that consent cannot be given if either party is under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Yeah. Consent doesn't exist.
Yep.
It is not possible. And so for me, that was a bit of a shock. But also that the education, the sex education system is improving, as you mentioned, but still wholly inadequate.
Yeah.
But one of the other things that came out of the show was that morning after contraception was highly inaccessible, was not possible for an awful lot of young people or even older people. So we've got a huge loophole here.
I mean, there's the sort of misconception that the morning after pill is an abortive pill, which it's not. It is contraceptive.
Yes.
And we have conscientious objectors on the basis that they think that it's an abortion and it's not an abortion. But I wanted to jump back on what you were saying about consent. And what I think is even more important than consent is informed consent. right? And there are still so many myths around sex that women, even of my age, believe. You can't get pregnant if you have sex the first time. You can't get pregnant if you have sex while you're upside down. You can't get pregnant if you're, you know, you've taken a certain drink. If you, like, how can you consent when you have no information? If we don't arm people, if we don't, you know, give people the knowledge that they need, the information that they need in order to make... In an accessible way, in order to make decisions about their bodies, their future, you know, their relationships. We are doing a massive disservice to our people.
Absolutely. And I will just say that there's a British site called Fumble, which is great and providing so much information to young people on using their language about exactly this and about other issues regarding sex. But we're agreed that there's a long, long way to go before we're in a position where we can say that sex education and support is adequate.
There's a long way to go, and we can't have the conversation without having the broader conversation about gender relationships as well, I think. And to speak to the morning after pill, which we had to fight to get it accessible. But when you face the third degree in order to be able to get access to the morning after pill, then it raises questions about accessibility as well then. So,
and you know, getting the morning after pill in Malta is very different from getting it in the UK. So like in the UK, you pop over to Boots or whatever, like nobody knows you. You're like, they're like, what's your name? You're like, such and such. Cool, where do you live? In this place. There you go. In Malta, it's like, what's your name? It's, you know, Mary Borch. Ah, you're the daughter of such and such. Dominant. what are you here for? Oh, actually, never mind. That's nobody's business. Yeah. That's nobody's business.
Yes, and just like Davinia mentioned, this conscientious objection situation means that sometimes you need to go through 2-3 pharmacies till you actually find it.
And we know that in Malta on Sundays, pharmacies are also closed. And, you know, so what
and
if...
you're also on a
time limit.
Not everyone can go to 3 different localities. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. So going back to, yes, prevention is incredibly important. And I agree, there is a long way to go. Something that Davinia mentioned also in the Sternway study was that whilst 95% did not regret having an abortion, they mention that they regretted the situations that led to being in that situation where they needed to have an abortion.
And I think that is what I've kept trying to say over and over again. And I think that is so, so incredibly important. You may not regret taking the decision to deal with the situation, but you wish you weren't in that situation.
And that's where respect comes in. And that's where what you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast comes in, because we live with difficult decisions that we have to make every single day of our lives. We live with regret every single day of our lives. And a decision, or a decision we hated to make, or a decision that we felt was okay to make, it does not define who we are. You don't become a horrible human being, a sinner, a murderer, and all these awful things, you know, that women are labeled as, because they made this decision. This was, like you said, most times a decision most people don't want to make. And just because they found themselves in this situation, the least you can do is not just bear witness, listen with an open heart, but it's also hold space. And sometimes, you know what, your input doesn't even matter. Yeah. Just keep your mouth shut, you know, just listen to someone's story. Realize how important you are in that moment for that person to be the person they chose to share this with you. And just sit there. And then if you have opinions, call a mate when you're out of the room. Put them down in your diary. Process it.
You said hold space. I would go one step further and say hold space and hold judgment. Because nobody on this island is immune from being affected by this issue. Nobody. We've mentioned...
Someone you love has had an abortion, whether you know it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. And for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And a multitude of reasons. I want to ask you, ladies, this play is powerful. You guys know that you're going to get a lot of positive and negative response to it, no doubt, and you have received already. But what is the purpose of the play? What is it that you're wanting to achieve?
So, like I said in the beginning, I think that when we have these discussions, a lot of the time, we're not really talking about people. We're talking about like some sort of weird over there ideology, hypothetical, whatever. Certainly for me, the main objective of the play is to humanize this subject. And to humanize the subject now for a Maltese audience. So we're saying, hey, these are your sisters. Like, these are your Maltese sisters. Listen to them, because they're, like Marta said, they've not felt safe before now to share this with you. But here it is. Like, come and listen to it, because here it is and it's happened. And whether you believe in it or not, the sun's still going to shine tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's happening. For me, it was really important that whatever skills I have, you know, whatever knowledge I have, then I'm using it to elevate the voice of somebody who has been shushed and silenced and told that they're not a good person and told that they've done something wrong and told that they have to hide this forever and God forbid anybody ever finds out about it. No. If I have to stick my neck out there for that person, that's what I'm doing. That's okay. I'll stick it out so that they don't have to. That's how much I believe in this.
Okay, look. I am so glad we've sat down and had this conversation. However difficult, however challenging, whatever the circumstances are, I'm so glad that we've done this, and I'm so glad that you ladies are going to be standing on that stage. I'm sticking your neck out. And I'm so glad that, Maria, that's something that you have done, that you've touched base with women who've gone through these experiences. For any woman who's listening to this, watching the play, contacting you and looking for advice, looking for someone to help them, whether they've gone through an abortion or they're looking to go through an abortion, where in Malta can we seek help? And safe help and safe space.
So there's an organization called FPAS, which is a Family Planning Advisory Service, which you can find online. And where there's, you know, a helpline, a chat line, you can contact them. They will give you the information that you need in order to make an informed decision.
I would stop that with that, really, because yeah. I know that that is a place where they can go and they will get the information that they and the support that they need.
And obviously there are different organizations online that you can contact, but FPAS is like the first port of call, right? Yeah. They will then guide you to the next step.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to put the contacts for that underneath the screen just here, whether you're listening on Spotify or you're watching on YouTube.
And, you know, I will say as well that FPAS is not there to sort of like to flog an abortion. They're there to listen to you and listen to what your family planning needs are. So if you need support, they are going to support you, right?
Whatever the choice is.
Whatever the choice that you decide to make,
Can I just say one thing to anyone listening who might be in this predicament, might be in this difficult situation? I also want to say that, you know, the hate and the anger is very public, but the love is very private. Mm. So whilst you might see a lot of rage coming at you, it's so easy for anyone to just sit behind their keyboard and just type, you know, horrible things and judge and point fingers. But even, you know, Dove and I, the support we have been receiving for the show has mostly been in private messages, in people checking in phone calls, because it's such a sensitive, private, vulnerable, and stigmatized topic that people really hold their cards close to their chest. But that doesn't mean that you're alone. And that doesn't mean that if you go to the right channels, you will literally find a very soft, kind, warm community to support you in the decision that you make. And I think that is really important, because we can sit here, talk about, oh, there's a long way to go, da, 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 da. But there's also a lot of love. Yeah. There's also an incredible community of wonderful people that put their neck out on the line every single day through a very difficult situation and, you know, odds that are really stacked against them. And they keep showing up every single day. Mm-hmm. And it's these people that we're doing this show for. It's these people that made Davinia and I feel like it's just so important to do our bit to be part of this conversation.
And I will say this about the hateful comments that we get, right? They are there. Some of them are worse than others. Each one of them spurs me on. So every single hate comment that I get makes me double down in my conviction that this is a necessary discussion that we should have. And rest assured that for every public hate comment that we get 10 private messages saying, thank you, we love you, yeah. Please bring it to Malta, please will you listen to me, please can you help me?
I'm going to ask you, ladies, I mean, I feel like I don't even need to because those are two beautiful yeah. statements, but I am going to ask for you to framework, similar to what you've just said, your kind of closing thoughts for this podcast. And I'm going to start. Maria, you must have known that I was going to ask you for closing thoughts.
But I have never felt so, I don't know how to say it in English. I was going to say Zeda. I've never felt so not needed as I have on this program today, because the way you captured it, I was like, oh my God, that was so beautiful. We need more conversations like this. When we were sat outside, I said, for me, it's just about love. And for me, it's still just about showing love. And to any woman that has had an abortion who's listening, or who is going through trying to figure things out and work through this process, you are not alone. I think that's the only message that I have today. You are not alone. And there are people who are ready to see you through this process. And I think it's time to really start talking, having a conversation about decriminalization in Malta.
My final thought is actually one word that we came across. It's an anacronym called NIMBY, not in my backyard. And it's there for when someone has an opinion, someone has a judgment, but then when it happens in their backyard, when it happens to someone that happens that they know, that's close to them, that they love, that's when they soften and open up and listen. And one last story that I want to share is someone that my family knows, very good, you know, traditional Maltese woman, volunteers at the church, very, her niece had a very wanted pregnancy within a marriage through IVF. So this couple wanted a child so much. They had complications that they only found out in the anomaly scan at 20 weeks. So that is way after the abortion limit at 12 weeks. And then a surgical abortion would be needed. And this couple decided that they wanted to terminate the pregnancy because this child wouldn't survive, and they couldn't do anything about it in Malta. So begrudgingly, they went to the UK, and this was right before the pandemic. They went, and surgeries that didn't seem essential or urgent were obviously stopped. So this woman came back from the UK and was forced to take this pregnancy to term. She gave birth to a baby that was not alive. And those last 4 months were just absolute agony. This thing happened to her niece. You know, really nice, wonderful, church-going woman, very stern in her opinion. And when this thing happened to her niece, in a set of circumstances that she never thought would happen to anyone close to her, to her family, she completely changed her opinion about it. And again, what she actually did was she softened and she listened. So I just want to remind everyone that what unites us, what we have, that is, you know, our humanity brings us closer together than what we have that separates us. So please listen, please ask questions, and don't be so quick to judge.
Compassion. Davinia, your closing thought.
something that I've learned as I've got older is that the way that I put it to myself is we are all we have, right? So I think sometimes we keep waiting for like an adult to intervene on our behalf and like save us, rescue us, whatever. That doesn't exist. What we have are, if you look around you, this is it, right? If you walk down the street and look around you, that's what you have. It is these grassroots like communities in your locality on the street of people. Humans are social animals. We cannot exist alone. We can't. And we can't wait for somebody to intervene on our behalf, right? The best, the most beautiful thing that we can do is to love somebody. And to love somebody means to treat them with dignity, to treat them with respect, to respect their choices, respect the choices they make in their lives, even if you don't agree with them, especially if you don't agree with them. And to love them anyway.
Yeah.
Especially when it's hard. How beautiful is that?
Yeah.
It's so hard, but I love you.
And you went right back to the very thing that I said at the very beginning. You don't have to agree with someone's opinion. You don't have to agree with you three ladies, your opinions and your thoughts and your experiences today, but you do have to show respect. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Life is never plain sailing, but your period is one challenge that shouldn't ever stop you or stand in your way. Tampax is the number one combination for comfort, protection, and discretion. Tampax tampons are independently tested, so you can be certain that there's no harmful substances present. Tampax adapts to your unique body shape to provide you protection even when you're living life to the full. Because nothing should stop you. Period.